Welcome to Two Peas in a Podcast, where in this episode, we're going to analyze how our political history reflects the power and representation struggle between majorities and minorities.
I'm Faith Grant.
And I'm Sophie Cole.
This Friday, we're coming to you live from Mr. Daniels' classroom.
And while most of us often think of majority as solely meaning a group of people, the majority can also be interpreted to be a popular ideology or the given laws of any time period before progressive reforms.
The very foundations of our country lay in democracy, the idea that we should be governed by elected officials who honestly represent what we as citizens want. And this system works when we, the people, are all in favor of the same thing, which almost never happens. Although vital for a diversified government, differences in opinions and social statuses led to the creation of minority and majority factions. The majority really can just mean a group of citizens in greater number than another group, such as middle-class majorities or Christian majorities.
So in elections, these majorities vote for like-minded candidates. So the majority group then has congressional representation, but where does that leave all the various minority groups? Well, right now, we're going to take a bit of a closer look at how our judiciaries have balanced majority demands with minority rights. The Supreme Court of the U.S. uses the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, but varying political climates, protesters, and the justices' personal views can even influence how the court chooses to interpret this document. In some of the darkest moments in our history, we see how governmental institutions were often based on maintaining a status quo rather than morality.
However, developments such as these tend to be more recent trends, as our courts are really just becoming more aggressive in their judicial activism. Several past cases will evidence how courts often protected immoral and even racist policies because they were favored by a majority. It's no surprise that our freedom of expression can be inhibited during dangerous eras, such as wartime. In World War II, many of you are familiar with the Japanese internment camps and may remember how they were entirely legal at the time as of Executive Order 9066. Korematsu, a man of Japanese ancestry, was cited for violating the Espionage Act. In their opinion, the court deemed that the need to protect against espionage outweighed man's rights.
And this marked a clear attempt to target the minority Japanese population under the guise of patriotism and national security. Well, it's safe to say that none of us lived through this time period and probably couldn't even begin to imagine the horrors of living during a war. Hindsight is 20/20, and it's still a clear example of minority rights being erased for the sake of protecting a majority. And now, we don't want to take up too much of your time listing all the ways America has disenfranchised minority groups, because we truly would be here all day. So let's end instead on a note of empowerment and discuss the revolutionary impacts of Brown versus Board of Education. A pivotal Supreme Court case, Brown versus Board set the civil rights era in motion and turned the tide in favor of minority rights.
In the early 1900s, and truthfully since America's birth as a nation, blacks were subject to brutally unequal treatment rooted in racial discrimination. Specifically, in the 20th century, segregated school facilities and public spaces were brought into the spotlight to be discussed. As of 1868, the 14th Amendment established the conditions for U.S. citizenship and guaranteed equal protection under the law to all said citizens. Equal protection essentially applies to all public accommodations, from restaurants, hotels, schools, employment opportunities, and even transportation access.
Because of this amendment's foundations for progressivism, the 14th Amendment has been the backbone of myriad cases and activities to advance equality. Yet, at the time of its ratification, the country was still segregated, requiring whites and blacks to use different public facilities, which were never in quote-unquote equal conditions. In 1952, Linda Brown, a young African-American schoolgirl, took a case all the way up to the Supreme Court as she sued for the equal protection she was legally entitled to under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution.
Linda Brown had been denied access to attend whites-only school that she passed every day on her way to the designated black school. Represented by the NAACP lawyer Thurgood Marshall, Brown sued the Kansas School Board for forcing her to attend a separate and unequal school facility, which violated one's right to equal protection. The country watched in anticipation to see if the federal government would, at last, recognize minority humanity. The court unanimously ruled in Brown's favor and ordered the government to desegregate the country, beginning with our school systems. Defying majority demands and even threats, the court chose equality.
Becoming another major decision of the Warren Court era, they ruled that the separate but equal doctrine was in itself inherently contradictory to the Equal Protection Clause, ensuring a wave of desegregation with all deliberate speed. Brown versus Board of Education also overturned the original Plessy versus Ferguson case that set up segregation. Several landmark cases have happened since then, but the struggle for true, genuine equality is still up in the air. Racial, gender, and religious discrimination is still as visible as ever, and who wields the power to change these dynamics is up to the people. Who will you choose to support, and who will you choose to represent you, whether you're a majority or a minority?
We end with a challenge for all of you. Whenever you find yourself in a majority party of any kind, simply listen to the other side of the story. Empower the minority opinion and embrace change.
Bye, y'all.